shame-attacking exercises. If you suffer from social anxiety, you probably have an intense fear of looking foolish in front of other people. Shame-attacking exercises can be a potent antidote to this fear. When you do a shame-attacking exercise, you intentionally do something foolish in public. You'll usually discover that most people don't look down on you, and the world doesn't really come to an end. In fact, most of the time, everyone ends up having a lot of fun. This insight can be tremendously liberating, but it can be terrifying at first. You've already seen a good example of a shame-attacking exercise. You probably recall Trevor, the man with the sweating phobia. When we went into the local convenience store, pointed to our armpits, and proclaimed how sweaty we were, people's friendly responses changed his life. I believe that shame-attacking exercises were invented by Dr. Albert Ellis. Although he's over 90 years old now, he's still going strong. Dr. Ellis gives a prize to the therapist who has done the most creative and outrageous shame-attacking exercise each year. Recently, a psychologist from Portland took top honors. He went into a busy drugstore and asked the pharmacist in a loud voice, "Can I buy 4 dozen condoms, please?" The pharmacist nodded. Then, when everyone turned to look, the psychologist forced himself to ask, in an equally loud voice, "Do you have the little teeny-weeny size?" Fortunately, a shame-attacking exercise doesn't have to be quite that extreme to be effective. If you're willing to try a shame-attacking exercise, you're limited only by your imagination and common sense. For example, you could stand up and loudly call out the name of the street at each stop while riding on the bus or subway train. Or you could walk up to a group of people waiting to get on the bus and offer to entertain them with a song. If that seems too challenging, you could simply walk down a crowded street singing loudly and enthusiastically. When you do a shame-attacking exercise, your goal is never to do anything that would seem hostile or insensitive or that would make other people uncomfortable. When Trevor and I went into the convenience store and made the announcements about our sweaty armpits, it was harmless, and everyone seemed to enjoy our zany behavior. However, it would have been inappropriate for us to do our shame-attacking exercises in a hospital, because it would have been upsetting to patients and staff. Context is everything. The idea is simply to be a little bit outrageous and to have some fun. Paradoxical magnification. Instead of refuting your negative thoughts, you can buy into them and exaggerate them. Don't try to argue with them. Instead, make them as extreme as possible. For example, if you feel inferior, you could tell yourself, "Yes, it's true. In fact, I'm probably the most inferior person in California at this time, and maybe in the entire United States." Paradoxically, this kind of absurd message can sometimes provide objectivity and relief. A young woman named Mandy was preparing for her brown belt test in Aikido, a Japanese martial art. She felt intensely nervous for weeks before the event because she kept telling herself, "I'll really screw up in front of everybody." Rationally, she knew this was unlikely, since she'd been working hard in class and had done well on all her previous tests. Nevertheless, she couldn't stop worrying and obsessing. This was especially frustrating for Mandy because, according to the underlying philosophy of Aikido, you're supposed to let go of your tension and go with the flow if you want to turn in a peak performance. I suggested paradoxical magnification. Instead of struggling to be relaxed, which would backfire, Mandy could do just the opposite and spend 3 minutes twice a day telling herself things like this: "Not only will I screw up, but I'll undoubtedly be the worst person in the class, and perhaps in the entire country. I'll probably lose coordination and flail my arms and legs in a clumsy, foolish fashion, while my face turns beet red from nervousness. Everyone will scorn me and laugh at me. They'll not only see that my technique stinks, but that I'm a total emotional wreck as well. Word will spread throughout the city, and soon everyone will know how dreadful I am, not only at Aikido, but at life in general. After practicing the paradoxical magnification a few times, Mandy's fears began to seem absurd. She decided to set her pride aside and simply view the experience as another opportunity to practice and learn from her mistakes. Later, she reported that her test was actually a lot of fun and that she received high praise from her teachers. Humorous imaging. When you're anxious, frightening images will often flood your mind. Using the what-if technique, you usually can unearth the fantasy at the root of your fears. For example, if you have public speaking anxiety, you may picture the audience getting bored and falling asleep while you read your speech in a flat, uninspired tone of voice. Or, if you're afraid of dogs, you may have a frightening mental image of a dog growling and biting you. There are many ways to deal with these kinds of frightening images, just as there are many ways to challenge a negative thought. When you use humorous imaging, you substitute a funny, absurd fantasy in place of the one that's making you anxious. A shy woman named Nadine often noticed an attractive single attorney who'd just moved into her apartment building. I asked if she'd tried flirting with him a little. Nadine said she'd love to, but felt too nervous, even to make eye contact. She was afraid she'd look awkward or needy and turn him off. I suggested that when she was talking to him, she could look directly into his eyes and imagine that he was defending a case in court in his underpants. This might lighten her mood and make him seem less intimidating. Nadine was intrigued by this idea and decided to give it a try, even though she was still pretty anxious. The next morning, Nadine ended up alone with him in the elevator as she was leaving for work. She decided to take the plunge. She gazed into his eyes and commented on what a neat tie he was wearing. At the same time, she pictured him prancing around the courtroom in his underwear. This broke the tension, and she began to giggle. He thanked her for the compliment and asked what she was giggling about. Nadine said that she didn't know, but there was just something about him that made her feel happy. He seemed intrigued, and they were soon engaged in a lighthearted conversation. As they were getting off the elevator on the ground floor, he confessed that he'd been wanting to meet her and asked if they might get together over a cup of coffee so they could get to know each other better. They made a date, and Nadine went off to work on Cloud 9. The goal of the humor-based techniques is to help you see the absurdity in your fears. When these techniques work, they can be magical and very healing. However, if you're feeling angry or upset, they could have the unintended effect of making you feel even worse. If they're not helpful, that's not a problem. Just try another technique. If you've ever suffered from depression or anxiety, you're probably aware of how you rip yourself to shreds for all your flaws and shortcomings. Before you can feel better, you'll have to find a way to silence the relentless critic in your brain. How will you do that? There are two basic strategies: the self-defense paradigm and the acceptance paradox. When you use the self-defense paradigm, you argue with your negative thoughts and insist that they're not true. This strategy is based on the idea that your negative thoughts are deceptive and distorted, and that the truth will make you free.